we need to be more diligent in putting those checks and balances in place and making sure that it's not overly aggressive and that we're taking a look and making sure that it kind of aligns with what today's market is saying and the environment is saying, with some additional conservatism on top of all of that.
Do you love your job but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon, and I'm super excited to have Eileen Brack on the podcast today. She is the co-founder of Bonavest Capital, and she's also the co-host of How Did They Do It Real Estate podcast. And she's been doing it for a few years. She's got over 600 guests on that podcast. So I'm super pumped to have her on. She is actually still working as a W-2 employee and is active and passively investing in multifamily deals. We walk through her journey of how she kind of started the process of thinking about passive investing and then also getting into active investing. Her and her husband started Bonavest Capital. So we talk a little about how they kind of split up the duties because they both are still W-2 employees. So I am super pumped to have Eileen on the show, and let's jump into it. All right. Hey, Eileen, thanks for being on the pod. Really appreciate you joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. You've got a very interesting background. So why don't you kind of give the audience a little bit of an introduction of kind of who you are, what you're doing, and then we'll dig into some other stuff.
Yeah. So I have a background in aerospace finance. I've been working there for like a little over 13 years so far. Worked my way up the corporate ladder, did what most people did, went to school, got good grades, got my MBA, and then got a good job and continued working. And then back in 2018, I remember I was pregnant with my first child. And at that time, I remember it was really such a blessing to be able to have that 3 months of maternity leave to be able to stay at home with him, be there for him 24/7. But then after those 3 months were up, then we had to make a decision on putting him in daycare, trusting that somebody else, some strangers, were going to be able to care for him in our absence as best as they could. He would be safe. It's a really hard decision, but it was something that we had to do since both me and my husband had to go back to work. I live in California, so it's a far drive, the commute all the time. So I always had to take a van pool in the past. So I never had a car to drive back and forth from home and everything like that. So I remember a couple of weeks into putting him into daycare, I had gotten a call back from the daycare and they said, hey, your son, he has a high fever. You need to come pick him up now. Being a first-time mom, you feel kind of like a failure. I can't be there for my son. I was freaking out at that time, calling my husband, calling family members, like, who can help me?
Right.
Pick him up. And it really dawned on me at that time that I didn't want to have this feeling of not being able to be there for my son. There had to be a better way to do this. I wanted more control over my time and how I spent it. So I started looking at different opportunities and to try to create other ways of passive income for myself in case something were to happen, gain a little bit more control of my time, my freedom. And I stumbled across real estate syndications. I always knew that real estate was a great place to build up wealth. And we were initially looking in California, but it just didn't make sense in terms of what we wanted to do. And we kept getting outbid on every single deal that we were submitting on. So we started looking outside of California. And then eventually we turned and found multifamily syndications, which is just a fancy name for group investments.
Yeah.
And so I've been really investing both actively and passively since then, and really have found such a blessing to be able to grow, not just on the financial side of things, but personally as well, being able to gain some more of that freedom back and pursue a life where you get to make choices.
No, that's awesome. I'm very curious to talk a little bit about kind of your journey, because you're still a W-2 employee, right? Like you haven't taken the plunge that some of the people I've had on the pod, they were in the W-2. They kind of had that moment or time period of like, hey, I want to do something different. I want to, to your point, control my own time, generate some passive income with their goal to ultimately leave and do this full time. So a lot of my audience are in your position in the sense that they are W-2 employees, they work full time, they make good money, and they want other options outside of their company 401k in the stock market to generate different returns, more stable returns, or passive income, right? So as you were home, what triggered that move or that kind of mindset shift? Was it a book or a podcast? Like, how did you kind of take that leap to start the process? And then I want to unpack a little bit more about the time that you have that you spend doing the active stuff, because obviously it's more time consuming to look for deals than it is just to write checks.
Yeah. So back in 2018, it was just more of like, let's find some ways to create streams of income for ourselves. We want to be able to really find ways so that in case something were to happen, we have a sense of security. And then we started looking at different things and we started investing and looking at different opportunities in real estate. But I would say really, it didn't really kick off until 2019, 2020. And then as we got into COVID, that spurred on to really expedite our journey and where we're at today in terms of the active side and the passive side of things. Because what we saw during COVID time was our jobs are originally, that's the safe route. That's what everybody says. You need to find a job that's going to pay your bills and everything like that. But what we saw with COVID happening, people who had high paying jobs, who thought they were secure, they were getting laid off left and right. People who've been working for the companies for years and years never thought that that could happen to them. They were also laid off. And so we're like, we don't want to be in that situation. We like what we do, but we want to make sure that our family is safe first, that we have some other streams of income to fall back on in case something like that were to happen, and that we can choose to continue to work instead of just having to work to pay from bills to bills.
Yeah.
And so that's how we really started like going forth and really investing as much as we could. We started like networking and started growing our network and the really putting a lot of effort into the real estate stuff back then.
Yeah, no, it's so funny that you mentioned, I've said it a lot on this podcast. My background is in recruiting and I've worked for big companies and small companies. And people think that having a W-2 job that you've worked at for years and years is the most secure thing, but you're a line item on a spreadsheet for the finance team and you're in finance. So you kind of understand how it works, but the company needs to survive. Sometimes they need to make hard decisions on the employees and you really have no say in the matter. And so, yeah, having those extra income, having the passive income, having these other investment options gives you, I talk a lot about financial foundation. And that is that footing of, okay, if something happens, I have at least something coming in passively that I don't have to spend the time doing investing in. I can kind of do it and have this income coming in. So I want to talk a little bit about your journey and kind of some of the time that you devote to passively investing. But before we jump into that, I want to take a quick sponsor break. So we will be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back with Eileen on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. So we've started to talk about her journey of still being a W-2, but having the time to both actively and passively invest in multifamily real estate. So a lot of the people, like I've mentioned, are on this show or listen to the show, have aspirations of passively investing. They want to keep their W-2 job, but they have extra income or extra money that they've saved and they want to passively invest and they don't want to spend a lot of time. You're in the position where you have a W-2 and you are actively investing. So talk a little about what investments are you looking at? Obviously been in multifamily, but where are you looking at them? How are you going about kind of finding these deals? Yeah, let's just start unpacking that because I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, so I think we can go back to when we first started out, we were looking to strictly just do passive investments.
Okay.
However, if you look at it, to be able to invest passively in deals and try to cover your expenses or try to at least cover your current salary right now, you're going to have to invest in quite a lot of deals to be able to do that. So it's trying to figure out a pathway to expedite that as much as possible, because ultimately the end goal is to be 100% passive and just let your money just continue to build upon itself. And then you can choose to do whatever you want to do. So my whole thing is I try to work as hard as I can actively, and then I can take all of that and I can invest it passively and have that growing. So with those two aspects of it, it's really expediting the journey and trying to look at all aspects of it, trying to cover all your bases. And so really with the active side of things, it's really just trying to grow out your network, building up those relationships, meeting with other people and networking, because what they say is your net worth is based off of your network. Yep. And so that has been our whole journey entirely so far, is just building out that network and then talking to people and finding those good connections and those relationships. And how can you add value to other people to get onto the more of the active side of things? And that was just kind of like an organic growth over time.
And how many have you done from an active standpoint? What types of deals have you done? Because obviously there's a lot of different roles you can fill in being an active investor. You can actually be finding the deals. You can help raise money and do some of the investor relations. Where do you guys kind of start, or what kind of aspect do you kind of focus on?
So one of the things that really helped us get started and to really, I think, gave us an advantage when we decided to move into the more of the active side of real estate was we started off as passive investors first. So our first and foremost, the way that we think, the way that we invest and look at deals is from a passive investor standpoint. What's important to them? What are they looking for? Because we ourselves are also passive investors. So that gives us a really good handle on when people are talking to us and asking us about things that they're interested in, how are they able to do the same types of things? It gives us a different lens to look at because we come from a passive investor standpoint. So we kind of see their points of views. And then so from there, it was, I also have a podcast myself so that it's building up the networks and the community and the relationships. So having a network of people that you can tap into, bring into deals to help close and everything like that, key members. Also, me and my husband were fortunate enough to do this together. So he focuses on the acquisition side of things. He does underwriting, building out lenders, creating those different capital stacks. And for me, it's talking to investors, doing the podcast and building up network and deal funnels and trying to find out other team members that we can bring in and everything like that too. So together, combined with me and my husband and other team members that we've been able to build, that's kind of where we're at.
Got it. And is your husband kind of full-time in the real estate stuff, or is he also a W-2?
Yep. He's also the W-2.
Got it. So you are working hard during the day, and then you're also working hard at nights and weekends and all that stuff to find deals and make it work. Because it is super powerful to kind of have both sides of the coin. And if you have the time and the ambition to do it, I know a lot of people that have done large deals, they found these deals, these 100 plus unit apartment complexes, while still having a W-2 job. And so it is absolutely possible to do it. You just have the mindset and the priorities to take the time outside of your 9-to-5 working job and spend the time talking to brokers, going to tours, investing your time in that way. Have you guys done any deals actively where you found them? And also, what markets are you really interested in right now?
Yeah. So we are constantly looking at deals and underwriting. And so especially in today's markets, it's been a little bit more challenging because the numbers just don't pencil out as easily as they did in the past. So we take a little bit more of a conservative approach when we do our underwriting. But the deals that we focus on are in markets like in the Las Vegas area, the Carolinas, Atlanta. We like the Sun Belts. So those are the types of markets that we look at. And we focus on value add opportunities. So places where we're able to do some renovations, increase and improve the properties to increase the rents. We want to be in those types of neighborhoods. And those are the types of things that we look for.
I know a lot of people look at the Carolinas, Atlantas, the Floridas, they're all on everybody's bucket list as far as like investment targets. I'm curious kind of what you like about Vegas. Not that I know much about the market. I'm just kind of curious about it.
For us, it's primarily location. It's very close to California, so it's only about a 3.5 to 4 hour drive from where we are at. So if we need to go take a look at a property, do due diligence on it, we'll leave early in the morning. We'll leave at like 4 or 5 in the morning, make a trip out there for the day and then come back home. We have our two little kids, so it's kind of hard to be away from them then like for several days at a time. So we can make those trips pretty easily. But at the same time, during COVID time, that market, a lot of people thought that it was going to hurt quite a bit because it was so heavily focused on the travel industry and in tourism, but actually it pretty well during that time. And so it's continuing to grow in that area. If you go there now, there's so many different cranes, buildings are being built, a lot of apartments are being brought up. And so there's just a lot of development, a lot of great things going on. The employment market itself is diversifying some more. And so that's what we like to see. Population is starting to grow. So those are the types of things. It's a good market to be in.
Yeah. I live in Austin, Texas, and surprising how many cranes you see in the air, all the development that's going on. And I imagine Vegas is very similar. I want to shift to a little bit of the passive side of it. And when I started investing in real estate, I was active. My wife and I bought a duplex, and then we wanted to quickly scale and go into these larger syndications. But in order for us to kind of feel comfortable doing it, we did similar to what you did. We passively invested because I wanted to understand the process, the mechanism of how to actually go into these deals. You're signing a bunch of documents. You are actually, how we do it, you buy shares of an LLC essentially. And so there's a lot of legal structures that you have to go through. It's much different than buying a duplex by yourself, right? And I imagine it was similar to you. You wanted to kind of understand the process so that when you're talking to passive investors, you can explain to them, if they haven't done a deal, what to expect. So as you're talking to your investor database of passive investors, what are you talking to them about? Like, this market, we're recording this in mid-February 2023, inflation's high, interest rates are high, pending recession, who knows if that's going to happen and when. So what's the sentiment that you're kind of feeling from your investor network?
Yeah, so you get kind of two different types of views, right? One is there are some who are wanting to hold back and not invest yet and take a bit of a sideline so they can see how the market flushes out. The potential recession coming up here, interest rates are still moving around a little bit. And so people want to kind of see where that goes. However, you have the other second set of group that they know real estate, they know it's recession resilient. And so they're always going to continue to look for good deals. What I've been telling people though is right now, there are still deals to be found. Real estate is always going to be a great place to invest and put your capital in. They're backed by hard assets and people always need a place to live. However, in this current environment where we are now and with a lot of things up in the air and what we don't know about, we need to take a step back a little bit and add a little bit more conservatism to our numbers. In the past, you would see deals left and right. People would be making money. You'd see people selling things. They're making like 2-3x multiples. We're not in that type of environment anymore. The projection and how people are underwriting and the things that they're putting into their numbers to for the futures, a lot of that has to be scaled back now. There's so much unknown unknowns right now. And so the reserves and everything like that needs to go into it, we need to add another layer of conservatism in there. And so the deals, as we evaluate it, we need to be more diligent in putting those checks and balances in place and making sure that it's not overly aggressive and that we're taking a look and making sure that it kind of aligns with what today's market is saying and the environment is saying, with some additional conservatism on top of all of that.
Yeah, I think conservative is the most overused word in the multifamily syndication world, because everybody talks about we're conservative and everything. And I think right now, if you bought a deal in the last 2-3 years, the market and the amount of increases in pricing and increasing in rents just kind of papered over a lot of bad operators. And so I think 2023, I agree. I'm still a buyer in 23. I think there's going to be less deal flow. There's some people out there talking about all these distressed assets and people are going to be able to buy deals pennies on the dollar. I don't think it's necessarily going to be that bad. I think there will be some people that feel pain because they bought a deal in a year or two ago and they bought it on variable rate debt without a rate cap. And so now their investors may be like, hey, let's just exit this thing, get as much money back as we possibly can and move on to something different. So how are you guys thinking about kind of the conservative approach? You talked about some additional financial scrutiny that needs to go into it, but what are some of the things that you're looking at and how are you communicating that to a passive investor so that, let's assume that they may be somewhat involved in real estate and they need to feel comfortable that you are conservative and not just saying it's conservative? Like, how do you kind of layer that in?
Yeah, right. And so before we get into that one too, just to kind of piggyback a little bit on what you were saying earlier about the different types of operators and as some of them have different variable debts and everything like that, it's also going to really show who are the good operators and who are the bad operators, because right now it's so important to actually manage and operate your properties. And so the ones who are newer and who are just banking on like appreciation and don't really know how to operate it, you're going to see that quite clearly in the returns that you're getting. And then those people are going to be hurting a little bit more when they're unable to pay the debt when that comes around. So it's kind of interesting to see in this environment right now. And then your question, I totally lost my train of thought.
No, it's fine. I agree. I'll just comment and then I'll ask the question again. But I think I've said this before, so listeners are probably sick of hearing me say it, but I think 2023 is going to be the year of the operator, right? I think there's a lot of operators, to your point, that they won because they bought a deal at the right time and sold it at the right time versus actually having to operate the deal, because nobody saw the appreciation that happened over the last few years, especially in rental income increasing 20, 30, 40% without really doing anything. And so you never underwrote that and you can't underwrite that now. You can't put a 20% rent increase expecting that to happen year over year. So I think my question was back around, how do you communicate to your investors that are interested in continuing to invest this year? They're probably, even if they are knowing that real estate is recession resilient, I like that, I always hear recession proof or something like that. How do you kind of explain to them the level of conservativeness that you're kind of putting into the deal so that obviously you feel comfortable going after it, but they also feel comfortable putting out and investing into those deals?
And conservatism means different things to everybody. Totally. And so you have to really dig in and ask the right questions to see if someone, an operator's conservatism and their projections align to what your understanding and what your expectations of conservatism is, because it could be a huge different spectrum. So when I say conservatism, I'm just talking from my point of view and what we typically look for. It's the rental increases, for example. In the past, you would see 8-10% potentially of rent increases year over year. Now you're not seeing that at all. A lot of the markets that had experienced a lot of these high rental increases, they're not getting that at all. And so now we're seeing 0% rent increases in year one, potentially 0% in year two also, because things are starting to flatten out. We're not able to achieve some of those rent projections that were initially in the underwriting on the past year, 2 years. And so looking at those types of things, and also, is it realistic your net operating income from year one, when you take it over into year one, does the operator have like a double net operating income, and how are they going to get to that business plan? The other thing is when people are turning and they have those renovations in place into their business plans, are they being conservative enough? And is it feasible to be able to turn 3, 5, 10 units in 1 month or not? And does that market support it? Is there enough labor and supplies in there? And so kind of using your best judgment and looking at all these little things is super important, especially in today's market. And then also looking at the debt and then the exit caps of what people are projecting also. You need to have a little bit more spread in today's market now on that. So looking at that. And for me, it's always a lot of it also is about reserves too. How much reserves are they allocating to this deal? And is it going to be able to cover unknown types of things? You have reserves to cover for things you know could potentially go wrong. But at the same time, you need to have an extra layer of reserves for things that are unknown as well.
Yeah, I think I've seen a few deals that a couple of friends of mine are invested in that are undercapitalized. And so they've had to do capital calls, right? So that really just means that some of them are GP only. So essentially the lead goes, hey, we're going to be short on our debt service, or they're going to be short on being able to execute their business plan. So the general partners have to shell in or put in additional money out of their pocket to keep this deal moving forward. That's kind of like, I would call it okay capital call, because you're just going to the GP team and you can kind of keep that under wraps. The bad ones are when you've got to go back to the LPs and say, hey, we need money to keep this deal floating. And so I have not been a part, knock on wood, to any either of those, but I've heard other syndicators out there. And I think it goes back to your point about you're really gunning to see who the good operators are and who bought well, right? Because I think some people over the last couple of years just wanted to get a deal. So they overpaid or paid what market was, which was way over what I think is normal. So it's definitely an interesting time for sure. So I guess you are a W-2 employee. So this is kind of an easy thought process for you. So as I mentioned, a lot of the people listening to this podcast are in your position. They make good money, but they want to have some other investment options outside of just 401ks and the stock market. What are some good first steps, or maybe some advice you would give to them to start their journey? And obviously, if they're listening, that's a good first step. They're getting some knowledge. But how did you kind of think about it? And what would you kind of give them as kind of initial advice?
So I think taking a look at your own situation and your risk tolerance and see where that is, and understanding where you align and what your goals are to try to achieve. That's really important to kind of set the stage for going in and trying to decide and determine what other types of investment vehicles are available to you. For example, stocks for me aren't necessarily something that I'm interested in because I don't really understand it that well. It's out of my control. I can't impact it. Whatever happens is going to be based off of the market. So I don't particularly invest heavily in stocks because of that reason. Real estate, for example, though, I love it because I can invest in a business essentially, and you can have the control of impacting the bottom line. There's levers that you can pull to be able to bring up the net operating income, bring in the values, and it's backed by a hard asset in case something falls through. And so that adds a lot of security for me. It adds a little bit more of a safety net. And so things like that for me, in terms of also the cash flow and the appreciation and depreciation benefits that we get from there, real estate offers all three of those things where other investment vehicles don't necessarily have it. And so as you're looking to see what your risk tolerance is and what your ultimate end goal is looking like, is trying to figure that out. And does it meet your goals? Are you looking for just a cash flow types of opportunities, or are you looking for purely appreciation or a combination of both? And so looking at all those factors, I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think risk tolerance is very interesting. I'm a very risk averse person myself. And so I like real estate similar to the reasons that you do, is you can go touch it. If I want to go see the asset, whether I'm a limited partner or an active investor, I can do that. People always need a place to live. And to your point, I don't understand the stock market sometimes. And so I like kind of physical assets that I can kind of touch and feel and actually like go visit. I think it's great. I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, because you've been doing it for what seems like a decent amount of time, and you can kind of share when you started it, but I know you're up over 600 episodes, I think, right? If I saw that correctly. So how did you start the podcast? Why did you start it? And how has it changed or added value to yourself and your business as you've grown your Bonnevest Capital?
So I started this back in middle of 2020. So kind of like at the heart of COVID times.
Yeah.
And so one of the reasons why was, as we were getting into real estate investing, the syndication side of things, we learned the most by listening to podcasts. And so we connected with so many people through the podcast, and it was such a great way to consume content to educate ourselves. And so we were talking to a ton of different people, and we're thinking, well, why not start our own podcast? It's a great way to build out your network, you know, establish a thought leadership platform also. And so that's what we ended up doing, is starting our own podcast. We had to get over a couple of different mindset issues and limiting beliefs that we had for ourselves. But once we did that, it has really exponentially grown our business and our network. It's such a great tool to be able to invite these experts onto your podcast, have these conversations, 30, 45 minute conversations with people who are exponentially successful in the space, and you can pull and learn from them and then share that knowledge with as many people as you can. It has such a valuable tool, such a valuable platform, that for us, if I were to do it all over again, I would start the podcast 100%.
Yeah, it's definitely a fascinating journey. I have a recruiting business, and that's my life. I've been doing that since I got out of college. So I interview people literally for a living in my recruiting business, and now I get to do it on video, or if you're listening, just on a podcast, audio only. It's definitely an interesting journey for sure. So not where you are as far as tenure and experience level, but I'll get there one day. So I want to kind of transition to the final kind of part of the episode here. I've got a three-pack of questions that I ask every guest that comes on the podcast. So what's one piece of advice that got you started or has helped you along your real estate investing journey?
It's all about the mindset. And so once you're able to get past any limiting beliefs that you have for yourself, the future and what you're able and what you're capable of doing open so much more doors, and there's so many opportunities out there. And so getting past that limiting belief and like your own self insecurities and what you hold yourself back from, working through all those issues and opening up your mind has really, really pushed us forward.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And actually, before I go into the next, I want to go back to what you said about the podcast. And one thing that I struggled with, because I consumed a ton of podcasts when I was starting out, and I listened to Bigger Pockets constantly. The challenge that I fell into was every episode of Bigger Pockets had an expert in one area of real estate, whether it's single family, fix and flip, Airbnb, syndication. So it was hard for me to like pick one or focus on one. I kind of like chased a shiny object for about 6 months and went down a couple of different rabbit holes, but I finally landed on syndication. And so it's been a good journey, but I wanted to just share that because it can get a little bit like there's a lot once you start peeling back the onion of the real estate investing world. So second question, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
So I would say my favorite real estate book is the Best Ever Apartment Syndication book by Joe Fairless. It really gives a great outline, especially if you're starting out looking to get active or even try to understand the whole space. It really gives a good outline of the whole entire process.
Got it. No, I like that. And then if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off of the passive income that you're generating from real estate investments, what would you do?
I don't think it would change too much from what I'm doing right now, because as we're going along and as we're taking different actions and we're moving along, it's trying to enjoy the journey as much as you can along the way and really loving what you're doing. And so my day to day would look very similar to what it looks like now. I think the only thing that probably would change more is that I would have more time with my kids. I could pick them up earlier and do things more with them. And so that gives me some more time freedom for myself. But other than that, I think the day to day, especially with the real estate activities and the podcasting things that I'm doing like that, it's so enjoyable that I don't think much of that would change.
Yeah, no, that's kind of once you get into the real estate stuff, it doesn't feel like you're working really. It's kind of just fun game and journey. So I totally agree. So you have a podcast. It's called How Do They Do It Real Estate, right? Good way to kind of get connected with you. But what are some other ways the audience can get in touch if they want to learn about some of the deals you're working on or just kind of pick your brain about real estate?
Yeah. So they can, if they want to go to the website, and we have a free passive investor due diligence checklist and video series that they can check out. It just walks through the questions that people have as passive investors and what we look for ourselves as passive investors. So that's bonavistcapital.com/checklist. And then of course, connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just Eileen Prack.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thank you, Eileen, for being on the podcast. I really definitely appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Justin.
Absolutely. I hope everybody took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. And remember, you don't have to quit your career to build a passive real estate investing portfolio that will provide you with multiple streams of passive income. You just need to take some action, and listening to this podcast is a great first step. So Eileen, thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Justin.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.